Oh, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, has been sent to jail after a federal grand jury indicted him on charges of tampering with potential witnesses while free on bail. AP's Warren Levinson has more.
Both of the indictments that were brought against him were incredibly detailed, and there does appear to be a large amount of evidence in the cases against him. Now, again, we'll see what his explanations for that and whether any of this falls apart once the prosecution is put under the microscope by the defense.
President Trump says the Justice Department's Inspector General's report on the email probe of former Secretary of State and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton reached the wrong conclusion when it determined that there was no bias in the agency's handling of the investigation. The report then says that FBI Director James Comey had missteps leading the investigation of Clinton and that it damaged the FBI's credibility. President Trump is going ahead with a 25% tariff on $50 billion worth of Chinese technology imports, intensifying a trade dispute between the world's two largest economies. A spokesperson from China's Ministry of Commerce said the U.S. has ignited a trade war. Erlen Ek is an analyst at China Policy Consultancy on further issues for the Chinese.
As long as the U.S. is acting more or less alone, and as long as the U.S. is also attacking other developed countries, China don't see a big problem. If the EU, Japan, and some other countries were to team up with the US in a more sophisticated strategy, then I think they would be more alarmed.
China has also compiled a list of $50 billion in US products that would face retaliatory tariffs. This is VOA News. Yemeni officials say Saudi-led forces have entered the airport in Yemen's key port city of Hodeidah. The media office of the Yemeni military said the allied Arab forces gained access to the airport Saturday, the fourth day of the coalition's campaign to retake Hodeidah from Shiite rebels known as Houthis. A source with the military told Reuters that we need some time to make sure there are no gunmen, mines, or explosives in the building. Hodeidah is an important and strategic location since it's the entry point for humanitarian aid, including food. Yemen is a nation on the brink of famine. The U.S. State Department has issued a travel advisory for Russia, urging globetrotters to reconsider their travel plans there due to terrorism and harassment. The advisory issued Saturday comes as Russia is hosting the World Cup Games at 11 locations around the country. The statement says, terrorists may attack with little or no warning. Bomb threats against public venues are common. It also says that U.S. citizens are often victims of harassment, mistreatment, and extortion by law enforcement and other officials. And U.S. consular assistance to detained individuals is often unreasonably delayed by Russian officials. State Department says Russia has reduced the number of U.S. diplomats in Russia, causing the U.S. government to have a reduced ability to provide services to U.S. citizens. The Nicaraguan government and civic groups have agreed to call a halt to all violence and allow an international task force to investigate the recent anti-government protests that have left 170 people dead. The minister said Nicaragua has experienced an unprecedented savagery, a wave of crimes that dismays, that frightens. Negotiators also agreed on the removal of road blockades erected by anti-government activists. As Stephen Hawking was laid to rest at Westminster Abbey in London, the European Space Agency paid tribute in a special way. Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda has that story.
The words of the legendary physicist Stephen Hawking are being used in a final tribute in a very fitting way, by being blasted into space with a message of peace. Friday was Hawking's memorial service at London's famous Westminster Abbey, his final resting place, among the likes of Isaac Newton and Charles Darwin.
I have long wanted to go into space.
His voice, beamed the same day by the European Space Agency toward a black hole over 3,000 light years away.
There is unlimited potential for what the human mind can learn and develop.
Hawking's work on black holes was among his most influential, building on the ideas put forward by Albert Einstein and challenging many scientific assumptions about them.
That is Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reporting, and I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Very rigorous in terms of respecting the law. While in the CPOP countries, we don't see any.
Angolan President João Lourenço wants to join the Commonwealth of Nations.
The departure of Mugabe, the rural vote is likely also to try and consider other options. But I bet my last cotton dollar that Emmerson Mnangagwa is heavily, deadly relying on the rural vote.
The Zimbabwean ruling ZANU-PF party chooses President Emmerson Mnangagwa as presidential candidate ahead of the July general election.
We can't go to work when we know very well that we would not be paid. Because what guarantee would be there that if we continue working with the hope that we would be paid?
And the government of Eswatini says it does not have money to pay public sector workers at the end of the month. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Angolan President João Lourenço says he wants the country to join the Commonwealth of Nations. The group comprises mainly of former British colonies, but recently, Rwanda and Mozambique have joined the Commonwealth. The Angolan president says he wants to emulate Mozambique, a Portuguese-speaking country which joined the mainly English-speaking group. But critics say the president's move is aimed to distract from Angola's poor human rights record. For the latest development, I reach Alcide Sakala, an opposition member of the Angolan parliament and the spokesman for the main opposition party, UNITA.
First of all, it is an intention. There is not much debate in Angola about the preposition of the president. His explanation is that Angola is surrounded by countries who speak English, like Zambia and Namibia. And from that point of view, he thinks that it would be useful for Angola to be a member of the Commonwealth. That's really an intention. We have not yet got into details in terms of our party analyzing, this proposition. But I think that since Angola is a Lusophone country as Mozambique, we don't expect much from the Commonwealth, as far as Angola is concerned.
Even if there has to be a move by the government in Luanda, it has to be brought before Parliament for discussion and all that. Now, if this is brought to Parliament, what will be your response to this move to have Angola become a member of the Commonwealth and not its traditional Lusophone heritage?
Well, first of all, the Lusophone heritage is there. It's Portuguese, who are speaking Portuguese country. Within the Portuguese community, which means the CPLP, the relations are quite strong because besides the language issue, we have blood relations, with this great community. And I think that if the idea is to change Angola, get into the Commonwealth system, well, it is not something that should be debated. As I said, we as UNITA, within the party, we have not yet got into details for the moment. We have not yet discussed these matters. The idea is put just on the table by the president because he also said that he would like to have Angola also within the Francophone community, as French-speaking countries, which is really something new for our country.
Some Angolans are saying that it will be good that Angola will join the English-speaking countries because all your neighbors, significant trading relations with your neighbors are done in English, and that Mozambique has set an example, being a Lusophone country, is doing very well as a member of the Commonwealth. What is your take on that?
Well, from my point of view, as a citizen, it might have some advantages. For instance, from the point of the electoral process, since Angola, the government mainly, is not interested in having clear electoral process, because, you know, ever since we have begun with elections in 1992, Angola has known fraudulent electoral process up to now. And being the Commonwealth, that implies more responsibility, because the Commonwealth system is very rigorous in terms of respecting the law. While in the CTUP countries, we don't see any strong will to change the practices of the Angola government. I believe within the Commonwealth, where rulers are stronger, that can happen in terms of having in Angola the electoral process done according to the law.
Acide Sakala is an opposition member of the Angolan parliament and the spokesman for the main opposition party, UNITA. He spoke with me from the capital, Luanda. The Zimbabwean ruling ZANU-PF party has chosen President Emmerson Mnangagwa as presidential candidate ahead of the July general election. It came after he officially registered to participate in the upcoming vote. The president is expected to face a stiff challenge from Nelson Chamisa, leader of the main opposition movement for democratic change, or MDCT. The upcoming elections will be the first poll since the Zimbabwean military forced long-term President Robert Mugabe to step down. For the latest political update, I read Rejoice Ngwenya, a Zimbabwean political analyst based in the capital, Harare.
Well, it was inevitable because when he deposed Mugabe, it was quite clear that he was gunning his for presidential office. And really, given you know, the circumstances under which ZANU-PF has been operating in the past 37 years, he really is a good candidate for this. And I think ZANU-PF have chosen wisely, and they have chosen the right man for the job.
Rejoice, looking at how fragmented the ruling party is, talking about the Mugabe faction appears to be very displeased. Will Emmerson Mnangagwa be able to unite the ZANU-PF to win the election?
Usually, history has it that whenever there is an election, the ZANU-PF fragments kind of gravitate towards each other. Of course, this has never happened before, that an institution like Mugabe is outside ZANU-PF and is against the incumbent. That might have some effects. But my strong feeling is that those elements of ZANU-PF that would be, you know, wandering around without any interest in elections might eventually just opt for their old emblem, ZANU-PF, because this is a party that has been branded over the past 50 years. And it's very difficult for anybody within that camp to, for instance, put the X next to MDCT, the MDC Alliance. I have my doubts about that, really.
Looking at the MDCT led by Nelson Chamisa, some people are still not convinced that the opposition could form an alliance that could legitimately pose a significant challenge to Emmerson Mnangagwa. What is your take on that?
Well, that really would have been very likely. Had it been that, as you observed earlier on, ZANU-PF is completely united. But then the other thing is that the departure also of Morgan Tsvangirai and the entrance of Nelson Chamisa has given the MDCT and their partners a new vibrancy. You know, given that most of the registered voters are young people, my feeling really is that, you know, the generational transformation and the transition might come in handy for Nelson Chamisa, even if his political branding is a bit dicey. But the spirit of the moment, I think for the young people, they might want to try and experiment with his presidential candidature.
Some have expressed worry that the cities always seem to see the opposition parties. However, in the rural areas where ZANU-PF tend to get majority of its vote, the opposition parties are not in existence or are very few in organizing campaign activities in those areas. Do you foresee this changing ahead of the elections in July?
Well, I don't expect a radical change from that pattern. But let's remember that there has also been a very slow generational transformation in the rural areas and some dissatisfaction with the performance of ZANU-PF. And I should say that with the departure of Mugabe, the rural vote is likely also to try and consider other options. But I bet my last bottom dollar that Emmerson Mnangagwa is heavily relying on the rural vote, bearing in mind, of course, that there are a number of individuals that left his party who might also want to gnaw at his base. But I don't think it's going to change. The rural areas are largely, converted towards a ZANU-PF vote unless political miracles have been happening in our absence.
Rejoice Ngwenya is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He spoke with me from Harare. The government of Eswatini says it does not have money to pay public sector workers at the end of the month. Finance Minister Martin Dlamini told Parliament that the Southern African Kingdom does not have enough money to pay salaries of public sector workers or to pay government suppliers, adding that things were set to get worse. Local media reported the finance minister saying a move to issue government bonds to get more cash was unlikely to improve the situation. For reaction regarding the inability of the government to pay its workers, I reach Induduzi Jina, Secretary General of the Trade Union Congress of Swaziland, or TUKOSWA, in the capital in Mbabane.
Our response to that would be to say that would be a very unfortunate situation, because we have seen that coming. We have seen that coming from the expenditures that were not necessary that have been taking place in the country of late. The country has been in a lot of celebratory functions, like the 50-50, and a lot of money was used there. They bought the king a jet, which was then presented as a gift, costing millions of Malangi. And then we are seeing a government that is in a trend that is seriously wasteful, that is not targeting the needs of the people. All that we are saying is that we are only hopeful that they will be in a position to raise those funds. The workers have worked and they are entitled to be paid. And if they don't, and clearly we would mobilize our members to stop working and to collapse all the services, and we'll go to the street.
How effective this plan of yours to call on your members not to go to work, to go in the street? There's no money. So even if you go on demonstrations, that might not necessarily help the cause of your members, and they could get themselves sacked anyway from public service.
There is no way. The issue of payment of salaries is a fundamental term of a contract of employment. If we are breaching that fundamental term, then there is no contract of employment anyway. It would have been the government that would have breached a fundamental term of a contract of employment. It would not be us. For us, it would be a question of saying we have rendered services and we want to be paid for those services that we have rendered.
If you go in the streets, there are chances that you could be met by security agencies because it might not necessarily get sanctioned by the powers that be. How do you react to such circumstances? And wouldn't you be putting your members at risk, putting their life at stake by calling on them to go in the streets to protest against the government in Mbabane?
I mean, it is always a risk. All governments that operate themselves in the manner that our government is doing, if you are staying in the country and you are working for the country, you are at risk every day. So it would not be something that we would not be aware of. We would be facing those risks, but we would not be having any other alternative. We can't go to work
when we know very well that we would not be paid? Because what guarantee would be there that if we continue working with the hope that we would be paid, we can be paid in the following month? There is no way. It has to come to a cul-de-sac at some point so that everybody would realize that this must come to a stop. The government must be in a position to implement a fiscal discipline.
The government is suggesting some strong measures about cutting down its spending, and some are suggesting that the cut should go across board and that even the king's budget should not be spared. Do you subscribe to such suggestions?
Yes, that's true. If they can come out, it is only then that they don't come out with any budget cuts in the open to engage us. Because the starting point, if an employer is having challenges of paying salaries to an employee, that employer must engage the workers that they've employed to say, you are having this problem, and this is how we propose that this problem should be done. And then clearly, if then they are saying they are engaging on cost-cutting, say, measures, let those cost-cutting measures be open so that we can contribute towards that kind of a system. But for now, we have not been engaged in any one way or the other. It has only been made as some kind of political statement in Parliament. We are waiting for them to come out so that we can contribute. We would be in a position to point where we are of the view that the money is being wasted.
Induduzi Jina is the Secretary General of the Trade Union Congress of Swaziland, or TUKOSWA. He spoke with me from Mbabane. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has asked the police and courts to desist from granting bond and bail to persons suspected of murder. The president's remark follows last week's murder of a member of parliament and his bodyguard. Some have condemned his order as illegal since bail is a constitutional right. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached Charles Mwangui Mpaji, bureau chief for the East African newspaper in the Ugandan capital Kampala, to find out the reaction to this order.
It's been mixed. The president made those comments when he was addressing parliament during the presentation of the budget. He said he doesn't want to hear anything called police bond. He doesn't want to hear, and he said, it's good that the Honorable Chief Justice, the Right Honorable Chief Justice, is also here. Things about bail for these murderers, for killers. Now, the most interesting thing is the context or the timing with which the president made these comments. He made them in light of the recent murder of MP Ibrahim Abiriga, and he said those who are arrested should not be given police bond or granted bail by courts. He says he doesn't want to hear that. The mood is a mixture of shock because the president is making these comments. In the chamber of parliament, which was sitting at the conference center, the members of parliament, mainly from the ruling National Resistance Movement, because the opposition boycotted that sitting, were cheering the president on as he said these things. But outside, the reaction is mixed. What is the president, where is he coming from? Why is he saying this? Is he trying to explain away the failures of his government to rein in murderous crime in the country?
Following his comments, we understand one member of parliament who is being held in connection to the death of the MP who had been granted police bond, her bond was cancelled and she was rearrested.
Yes, it appears that the member of parliament for Mukono municipality, who is a member of the opposition Democratic Party, Betty Nambooze Bashereke, was in detention at the time at Nagalama police post, having been arrested a day earlier for comments she made about Ibrahim Abiriga before he was killed. And they're accusing her of something to do with making reckless comments and stuff like that. And her bond was cancelled. She's not in good health. We've seen images of her lying on police chairs with IV fluids drip off from her, on her hand. And now we understand the latest that she's been moved from, but still as a prisoner, and taken into a government hospital where she's receiving treatment. she can't be bonded out because apparently because of the comments the president made.
And further to the former police chief also has been detained for more than the constitutional 48 hours.
Yes, the iron of iron is that the president is making these comments when the man who was the chief defender of longer detention before trial, the former Inspector General of Police, General Kale Kaihura, is actually himself in detention and has gone beyond the constitutional 48 hours. Now the debate is his rights, like the rights of other defendants, should be respected. He should be presented before a court of law. He is being held and only being allowed access to close family and his lawyers. But General Kaihura had gone to Parliament to defend amendment of the law of the Constitution to allow for longer detention time before he could produce suspects before court or for them to benefit from the constitutional right to be granted bail. So we are watching to see how this plays out and what his lawyers are going to say when, if they make a statement, to see will they invoke, will they refer to precedents in cases he prosecuted personally especially political opponents of the government when he was in charge of the Uganda Police Force. That the verdict is still out there.
And what's the reaction of the Chief Justice? Because he was there as the president made those remarks.
The president kept referring to the Chief Justice and said, fortunately, the Right Honorable Chief Justice is here. He has for time to appear before Parliament and explain his position. But the judiciary issued a press statement yesterday quoting the Chief Justice as saying that the judiciary will continue to follow the law as it is and quoted the Constitution and its provision on the right to bail. The statement also quoted the Magistrates Court Act and the Trial and Indictment Act, which grants the right to bail as a right. The so-called retain the discretionary powers to grant it.
Charles Mwangu here in Paji is the East African Newspaper Bureau Chief in Uganda. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. Two promising new ways to prevent cholera are on the horizon. One is an entirely new kind of vaccine. The other is as simple as a cup of yogurt. Both may offer fast, cheap protection from explosive outbreaks of a disease that claims tens of thousands of lives each year. VOA's Steve Baragona has more.
Cholera can kill within hours. A vaccine is available, but it's not perfect, says Harvard Medical School microbiologist Matthew Waldor.
It's not terrifically effective, maybe 50 to 80% efficacy. Usually it takes a couple of doses.
And it can take up to 2 weeks to start working. So Waldor and colleagues aim to make a better vaccine. They engineered cholera bacteria that are missing the genes that make the microbe toxic. They fed these bacteria to rabbits and then fed them normal disease-causing cholera just 1 day later. It worked. Most of the rabbits lived. Those that did get sick took longer to do so than rabbits that did not get the modified bacteria. All of those animals died. If it works the same way in people, Waldor says that could help save more people's lives in an outbreak.
They might have more time to get to a healthcare facility. Like people died in Haiti of cholera because they couldn't get to healthcare, not because there wasn't life-saving therapy.
Waldor's team found the engineered bacteria acted as a probiotic. The good microbes kept the bad microbes from getting a foothold in the animal's guts. And he thinks the modified bacteria will also act like a typical vaccine and trigger the body's immune system. That would provide long-lasting protection from future infections.
This is a new type of therapy. It's both a probiotic and a vaccine. We don't know the right name for it yet.
Speaking of probiotics, another group of scientists was working with bacteria commonly found in fermented dairy products like yogurt and cheese. The microbes are known as Lactococcus lactis, or L-lactis for short. The researchers wanted to genetically engineer L-lactis to fight cholera, but they discovered they didn't need to change a thing about these acid-producing microbes, says Massachusetts Institute of Technology bioengineer Jim Collins.
And cholera dislikes an acidic environment, so we're able to use L-lactis in its natural state.
They found that mice fed regular doses of L-lactis bacteria nearly doubled their survival rate from cholera infection.
It was remarkably surprising and satisfying in that we were really getting frustrated on our inability to effectively engineer L-lactis as this living therapeutic.
The research from both Collins and Waldor is published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. They both say it should be fairly easy and cheap to grow their microbial medicines when an outbreak strikes. But that's still a long way off. These are animal studies. They say it remains to be seen whether either approach works in people. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the World Health Organization has confirmed that Ghana has been able to eliminate the eye disease called trachoma as a public health problem. Trachoma is a bacterial infection that can lead to blindness. It can be treated and prevented through a strategy by combining corrective surgery, antibiotics, hygienic practices, and improved sanitation. The U.S.-based Carter Center played a key role by assisting the Ghanaian Health Services in the effort to eliminate the eye disease. For more, I reach Kelly Callahan, director of the Carter Center's Trachoma Control Program.
Ghana used a dedicated community-based approach. They used community-based volunteers. They were persistent in their government dedication through Ghana Health Services and their Ministry of Health, and they relied on partnership. They used over 20 different organizations, including Pfizer, the International Trachoma Initiative, the Carter Center, Sight Savers, to come together in a focused approach to look at the strategy and how to focus the strategy in areas that needed it in those two regions of Upper West and Northern Region.
What specific structures did they put in place that could prevent future occurrences of this disease?
Well, that's a great question. So the strategy that the World Health Organization has endorsed is called SAFE. It stands for Surgery, Antibiotics, Facial Cleanliness, and Environmental Improvement. And Ghana, while it was implementing its surgical program and its F&E components, which is really water and sanitation, they actually built capacity at the clinic and primary health care unit and at the environmental health units to ensure that messaging for improved sanitation, face washing, using clean water, safe water, using latrines, that was integrated into their structures before the program started to move on. Also within their surgical component, they built a survey system that went door to door looking for all the last cases that would require surgery. And while they were doing that, they built the capacity of the surgeons to take care of any incident cases over time. So if there's any cases that might have come up a year or two later, the capacity was built of their surgical care physicians and mid-level workers that they could take care of the cases without any issues. So they transitioned the entire SAFE strategy, except for antibiotic coverage, because it was no longer needed. So the S, F, and E component, they transitioned that into their public health system.
How can other countries in sub-Saharan Africa emulate the example of Ghana in terms of its strategic partnership with Carter Center as a measure to prevent this disease in the future?
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. It's partnership. Other countries can look at a few things that Ghana did. Number one, Ghana dedicated to a goal. They said they were going to do it, and they did it, much like they did to eradicate guinea worm disease. They said they were going to do it, and they did it. They had some slow challenges that came up over time, but they were persistent over time. Number two, the power of partnership. Ghana looked at the power of partnership. They had over 20 partners working in different sectors and in different geographical areas to ensure what needed to get done got done, and they documented what they were doing by excellent data. They were evidence-driven so that when they were ready to go to the World Health Organization and say, hey, look, we've done it, They had all the documentation they needed to be able to say that. So really three things: the government's dedication, the power of partnership, and documentation, and all other countries in Africa can take a page from Ghana's book.
Talk to me about the Carter Center's support for Ghana in terms of training more than 8,000 community health workers, among other capacity-building measures that the Carter Center provided to support Ghana's initiative.
The Carter Center believes in working through government infrastructure at the community level. So what we looked at was, how can we build capacity at the community-based levels through community volunteers in different ways, whether it's agriculture or whether it was environmental sanitation or surveys or documentation? How can we train and help build capacity of community-based workers so that they can help themselves, bringing the necessary skills and resources so that they can help themselves and then help each other? We trained on a slew of different aspects of the program, from how to detect a case that required surgery to how to build a latrine, how to engage masons in building latrines, and how to teach people how to use latrines that might not have had a latrine before.
Kelly Callahan is the director of the Carter Center's Trachoma Control Program. She spoke with me from Atlanta, Georgia. From Jamaica to Kenya. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Tafuta tafuta huyu wafula, pengine Chawakali, pengine Bungoma, pengine Kakamega, Busia Boda, labda Ikolomani ama Webuye. Tafuta tafuta huyu wafula, Mulembe night, tafuta game ya ingwe, unatafuta wafula uko wapi?
Hey!
Too much class, then do me like assignments. Yeah. Please don't remind me of the bad times. Your sugar sweet, your icy, but in my eye, it shouldn't be so hard to make up your mind. Just do it one time for the one time. It's a coffee, you participate. Villain, medito, leonge, jonge, appreciate. Lighting intimate, 1+68. Pussy rush, ato kitoka sai, you'll still be late. Get a chance, you could feel regret. How much higher than this can you ever get? Any Mount Everest. And by sunrise, I'm gone. I'm not here that long. Keep it short and sweet.
DJ, play the song on repeat. Odi, odi, dance to the beat. Apolipo, come at and I feel so sweet. Apolipo, come at and I feel so sweet. Short and sweet. DJ, play the song on repeat. Odi, odi, dance to the beat. Apolipo, come at and I feel so sweet.
He gripped me bed sita, na sina kiti soda kalia kitanda na, ikitanda na ni 4x6, usingizi wa bono kako 6 feet deep, kabla nizame 6 inch deep, acha ni seti mood na maudi, na ngoma za kabaka daudi, na ngoma za oliva mchukui.
Getting closer, let's get warmer, lose the tension, be together, I know how to treat you better. Take this moment unforgettable, with this feelings undeniable. Moyo shajipa kwani, na nafsi mekukubali, nimekimbiza nyuki nile asali, oh Lord. I'ma keep it short and sweet, DJ play this song on repeat, odi odi dance to the beat.
Apolipo kamata na feel so sweet. Apolipo kamata na feel so sweet. Short and sweet. DJ play the song on repeat. Odi odi dance to the beat. Apolipo kamata na feel so sweet.
find this too exciting. Your friends tell you kudetun to come in mini high risk. Throw that shit behind me. Come sit beside me. If you got too much class, then do me like assignments.
Mama go, mama go.
To the end of time, may your body cross us to cure my son. Yeah, so don't be surprised if I kill myself all in the name of love. Me and I may be pair, will let me pay the price. So I dream, you see me team, why I'm a fair with rough. Beauty lies in the eyes of beholder. Oh, home to girl, I'm sober. And kind of life, and I'm chasing my daughter when it's over. To see, am I irresponsible? Me born more as a soldier. Jaina woman, kind of winning, brand your name, a soldier. Can be betrayed.
I'm
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, beware of the rain if you live in a mud hut. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After a controversial constitutional referendum in May raised the possibility of two more terms, Burundi's president Pierre Nkurunziza announced on June 7th that he would not run again in 2020. The United States had criticized the referendum process for a lack of transparency, the suspension of media outlets, and attempts to pressure voters. Pierre Nkurunziza was elected president by Burundi's parliament in 2005 and re-elected by popular vote in 2010. In 2015, Nkurunziza announced that he would run for a third term, disregarding the term limit provisions of the Arusha Agreement, which helped to end Burundi's civil war. His decision sparked a political and security crisis from which the country has yet to fully recover. This crisis included a failed coup attempt, civil unrest, government repression, and the exodus of political and economic refugees. In 2015, Nkurunziza won the controversial presidential election. In May of this year, the ruling party organized a constitutional referendum. The United States and other countries voiced concerns that passage of the revised constitution would be interpreted as resetting presidential term limits, allowing President Nkurunziza to run again. His announcement not to run in 2020 therefore surprised most observers. The United States welcomes President Nkurunziza's recent announcement that he does not intend to seek a fourth term, reaffirming the promise he made to the Burundian people in 2015, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. His decision to step down of his own accord would be a strong step forward for Burundian democracy and would set a positive example for other leaders in the region. We call on the government of Burundi to take transparent steps to improve governance, respect for human rights, civic space, and media freedom. These measures are essential for free, fair, and open political competition ahead of the elections in 2020, she said. The United States reiterates our continued commitment to our partnership with Burundi and its people in support of sustainable peace and development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.